Disrespect welcomes Monica Townsend, a research associate and an independent economist who's written a paper for the CCPA, the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives.
Right.
Monica, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay. What got you into this? The question of women's poverty in particular, and a modern report on it. We were talking about that before the interview.
Well, you may remember that for the last few years, there have been quite a lot of talk about policy, anti-poverty policies mm-hmm. among policymakers, and in fact, some provinces in Canada have implemented anti-poverty policies. Ontario was talking about it. Quebec implemented a very comprehensive anti-poverty strategy some years ago,
mm-hmm.
and Newfoundland and Labrador also has one, and other countries like Britain and European Union countries have implemented anti-poverty strategies. So I wanted to look at what was happening with women's poverty, because you may also remember we used to talk about the feminization of poverty,
mm-hmm.
meaning that the most poor and disadvantaged people were women.
Yes.
So I thought, well, let's look and see what's been happening to women's poverty in light of all of these policies that were being implemented. And then, of course, about a year ago in the fall of 2008, the recession hit. So that's why at that point I was already starting to work on it, but we decided to focus it a little bit more on the impact of the recession and what that might likely be on women's poverty. So that was the origin of the report.
Did you look particularly at Quebec and Newfoundland?
Yes, there is some information about that in the report, and in fact also about other countries where they've implemented anti-poverty strategies. The UK, for example, has a very comprehensive policy dealing with poverty, and so does Ireland. And then the European Union, countries in the European Union are following policies there for anti-poverty. But and some of those policies were having quite a lot of success, but there was some feeling among observers who looked at these policies that the reason for their success was a strong economic growth, and that seemed to imply that once economic growth slowed down and the recession
uh-huh.
hit, then their policies might not be as successful as they had been.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to look at, of course, was that the key objective in a recession is really to protect the most vulnerable, and women, it seems, are the most vulnerable in
mm-hmm.
in our society.
And their families.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, we don't yet have all the information about what's been going on, because there's usually a time lag between when information is collected and when it's published.
Okay.
For example, we have statistics on income, but only up to the year 2007, and those statistics weren't published till June this year.
Okay.
So we don't know yet what's happened to women's income, but we do know that certain groups of women have very high rates of poverty, and that implies that their situation should be addressed as part of any kind of policy to deal with the recession.
So is it fair to characterize your report as an ongoing thing where this other information is still coming in?
Yes, it would be. I mean, there are no plans at the moment to update it, but that's that might be in the cards further down the road when we have more information on incomes and that. But the groups of women that I'm most concerned with are the women who are on their own, and particularly women who are single-parent heads of families. Almost one quarter of those women are living below the poverty line,
mm-hmm.
And they're almost five times more likely to be poor than people in two-parent families. And the other group are older women who are on their own, and they have very high rates of poverty.
Yeah.
Their low-income rate is about 13 times higher than that of older seniors living in families. So those two groups are the most disadvantaged.
Oddly, these are the groups that are designated for support, I think. Most of them get fixed incomes, which should be adequate.
Those poverty rates, interesting enough, are measured after we take into account all the kinds of supports that they get from governments.
Mm-hmm.
For example, seniors get various kinds of pensions, as we know, old
mm-hmm.
age security, guaranteed income supplement. But even after you take all of that into account, we still have about 14% of older women who are on their own who are poor. And those high rates of poverty are actually higher than the so-called child poverty rate. And lots of the anti-poverty programs have focused on child poverty.
Right.
But these two particular groups of women have even higher rates of poverty than the children's rate.
I can't juggle the numbers on an impromptu basis, but do you tell me, do the numbers imply that most of the women on fixed incomes over 65 are impoverished by those incomes?
Well, when we talk about fixed incomes, that isn't entirely accurate, because those women who are the poorest of the poor are relying on government programs such as old age security and guaranteed income supplement, and those are both indexed for inflation. So they are adjusted to take account of inflation. But at the moment, as we know, inflation is not very high, so those incomes don't change very much as the years go by. As for women who are single-parent heads of families, many of those are relying on welfare, and welfare has not been increased regularly.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when you take inflation into account over the years, their real income has actually dropped. The National Council of Welfare has calculated that single-parent families on welfare have seen their real incomes drop by something like $8,000 over the last decade or so. So that's $8,000, that is. So that's a huge chunk of income which they have has made it much more difficult for them to live.
Is it then fair to say that the government has impoverished most of these women?
Well, I wouldn't blame it on the government. I think what the report does, some of it can be attributed to government policies, but what the report does was go through what are the roots of women's poverty, and there are a whole bunch of them that I deal with in the report. For example, many people, especially policymakers who are trying to reduce their welfare caseload, will say, well, the way to get out of poverty is to get a job.
Right.
We've all heard that, of course. But what that doesn't take into account is the fact the kind of jobs that women can get, and they're very different from the sort of jobs that men do.
Right.
For example, 40% of women's jobs are what we call non-standard jobs. That's part-time or temporary work through temporary help agencies or contract work, casual work, and so on.
Yep.
And those are the kinds of jobs that are not very well paid. They usually don't have any kind of benefits like pensions. And they're not secure. They have no job security. So getting women a job when that's the kind of job that they're likely to get is not going to help them very much. They may simply get off welfare and then become part of the working poor. Another issue that we need to look at is the fact that when women lose their jobs, many of them don't get unemployment insurance. For example, currently, of unemployed women, only 39% are getting EI benefits. Some of that's because they don't have enough hours to qualify, and some of it's because they've already exhausted their benefits and they can't get any more, and so on.
Right.
Then, of course, when we look at minimum wage workers, we find that 60% of people at the minimum wage are women.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the minimum wage in all provinces in Canada is less than $10 an hour. And the research shows that you just can't survive on it if $10 an hour is all you can get.
Yeah.
So there are a whole bunch of reasons that women have low incomes like that. The wage gap between women and men is still very prevalent. For women and men who work full-time year-round, women who earn only 71 cents for every dollar that men work.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that is because women work shorter hours because of their family responsibilities. But even if you compare hourly wage rates, you find that in almost all occupations, women earn less on an hourly basis than men do. So all of those are reasons for women's poverty, and all of those really need to be addressed.
Well, I won't argue that the attitude to women working is a component of women's poverty, but much of what you mentioned, the failure to qualify for EI, the minimum wage that is an alternative to living on fixed incomes or welfare, Those are government matters. And when someone is on a fixed income and can get a job, but the job doesn't pay any better than the below poverty income that has been falling for the last 15 years and they live on, really those categories, to my mind, and you tell me if I'm wrong, those are government-legislated poverty. In fact, the government has kept these women poor. The only place it hasn't is in the higher options of paid work, where women are more skilled, and then it's workplace attitudes.
Yes, as I say, there's no single reason, but it is. There are many areas where better policies could make a big difference.
So the single reason seems to be policy. If you spell it with a capital P, it's that whatever policy you turn to that the government enacts to alleviate poverty seems to forget women. It seems to forget the minimum wage. It seems to forget
EI. Well, in a way, that's true. And I think what some people refer to as gender analysis of what's going on is often not done. So policies are sometimes implemented without taking into account that they might have a different impact on women than they do on men.
That's an interesting thought, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a generous one, too,
yes.
That hasn't occurred to people.
Well, there's a section in my report that also deals with what the current Harper government has done in relation to women's poverty and the situation of women.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have done, actually, since they came in 2006, has gotten rid of a lot of the institutions that documented the inequality of women.
Oh.
For example, they withdrew the mandate of Status of Women Canada to promote women's equality.
Right.
They took away the funding for the research activities of Status of Women, which were designed to document women's inequality. They abolished the Law Commission of Canada and the Canadian Labour and Business Centre, which also did research on women's equality.
Yeah.
They terminated the research activities of Status of Women Canada.
Right.
They got rid of the Court Challenges Program that financed women's efforts to get equality rights. And then they cut funding to certain organizations, for example, the National Association of Women and the Law, which helped women with their legal problems and trying to get equality. And then, of course, they abolished the signed agreement that the previous government had made with the promises to establish a national system of early learning and childcare.
Oh.
So all of those policies have really undermined the push to get women's equality and to help women out of the kind of situation that they find themselves in.
Mm-hmm. The way you present it makes it clear that these measures all attack the equality and the rewards that women can expect from their own efforts. Is there any other, I'm going to go out on a limb and ask if there's any other rationale for the federal government having done this, or does it appear to be like an attack on women?
Well, I guess you could certainly look at it like that, but some federal government politicians have argued that women have already achieved equality, which is clearly not the case.
I've heard that, yeah.
Because there's plenty of information that demonstrates it's not true. So I guess there's kind of a belief that we don't need this information, this work anymore because women have gotten equality, but clearly that's not true.
So maybe a frustration with the prodding from women for equality has had an effect like this.
Yes, or the influence of certain groups that don't believe in women's equality.
Oh.
For example, REAL Women, which I think this is all nonsense, I think.
Yeah. Women should just stay home and get their hair done once in a while.
Something like that, yes.
Okay. So the report is done. The impact of what you studied is clear, although your reason for doing it, to study the impact of the recession, awaits further data and perhaps a further update of the report, which has not yet been decided, but looks likely and relevant. Have you got any impact, any feedback, any response from the people who believe that women have already achieved equality?
No, I've had a lot of interest in the report.
Yeah.
From people who are interested in what it says about women's equality and women's poverty, and certainly people are interested in finding out what's been going on, but no policymakers who can address the issues have reacted to it so far.
Well, that indicates that the problem will continue for some time. It's apparent to me, and I'm not an economist, and I'm not paid to do this, but it's apparent to me from the regular poverty stats that are available that women don't get an equal shake on or off fixed incomes. And now you've come out with a documented segregation of women's poverty, which establishes the thing even more clearly. You've gotten a lot of interest and no active response to remedy this. Do you put that down to the recession? Do you put that down to the same forces that created this poverty in the first place, or do you think that more study or more activism is needed?
Well, I don't think more study is needed, but certainly more activism is. Some of the anti-poverty programs that I talked about earlier do have, as part of them, the attention to addressing the inequality of women.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Quebec's anti-poverty policy pays special attention to women's equality.
Newfoundland?
And the European Union's sort of guidelines for anti-poverty strategies suggest that, you must also pay attention to the equality of women. So for countries or jurisdictions that are implementing good anti-poverty programs, they are paying attention to this. So we can only hope that this spreads to other jurisdictions, because it's really important.
Such as Ontario, which is facing a reputed $18 billion deficit in 2010-11.
Yes.
And has promised to study
policy. Ontario's policy focuses on child poverty, as the so-called 25 in 5 is reducing child poverty by 25% in 5 years. But as I said, these groups of women that I was talking about, that is women who are raising children on their own, or older women who are on their own, have higher rates of poverty than children do, so we need to pay attention to that.
I've always been a little confused by this this attempt to address child poverty as if it existed independently of parental poverty, and it strikes me that any attempt to address child poverty would address these single women who are by far the greatest number of heads of families with children in them.
Yes, well, that
in poverty.
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
Because, for example, there isn't really any special program in Canada that I'm aware of that looks at women who are on their own, raising children on their own. In the UK, they have a special program for lone parent women that helps them find jobs, that gives them advice and counseling and support and so on. But I don't think we have anything like that in Canada. And some policymakers argue, well, we give child benefits, and that's supposed to help women who are lone parents raising children on their own. But even when you take into account those benefits that those families get, we still find almost one quarter of women who are single-parent heads of families are living in poverty. So clearly those policies are not having much success in reducing their poverty.
And this still leaves single senior women out of the picture completely.
That's it, yes.
Was there anything else that you wanted to say about this issue and about the ability to move forward, make progress with it, following your study?
Yeah, no, I think it needs to be addressed on a number of fronts, the kind of thing that I've been indicating, not only for, changing employment insurance to provide benefits to women when they lose their jobs, bringing minimum wages up, addressing the income needs of older women. That could be done by increasing the guaranteed income supplement, for example.
Yeah.
Looking at the welfare rates and bringing them up to the low income cutoff, giving special attention to the income needs. We haven't talked about these, but some groups of people who are the poorest of the poor are people with disabilities,
right,
or Aboriginal persons or recent immigrants, Canadians from racialized communities, all of those people.
Are women in those groups worse
yes,
off than the men?
Yes, they are. In fact, a study was done by the Canadian CCSD,
mm-hmm,
who did a study saying that those are the most disadvantaged groups, but within each of those groups, women are disadvantaged more than men. So it's particularly important to pay attention to those groups. Developing a national system of childcare, which we did have, but the Harper government canceled. Regulating temporary help agencies, that's something I think that was in Ontario's budget. That would help women who are employed through those agencies.
In the budget, but not acted on yet?
No, not acted on yet, for sure.
Okay, all right.
And in all of those, really sort of making a concerted effort to address women's poverty, and then to monitor it as it goes along and measure what kind of progress we've been making in reducing it. So all of those things need to happen, and they're not just federal government or provincial. It's all federal and provincial governments together.
Partnerships.
The National Council of Welfare and some other groups have advocated for a national anti-poverty program that would address a lot of this stuff, but it needs cooperation between the federal government and the provinces to deal with it all.
That was Monica Townsend and her report, Women's Poverty in the Recession, September 2009. To read the entire report, visit www.policyalternatives.ca.
Yeah, and you don't see any way to get that cooperation at this
time.
Not
at the moment, I don't think, no.
Okay, well, I appreciate your thoughts on this, and I appreciate the clarity of your conclusions.
Oh, you're welcome.
Taking us some time to pull this interview together, Monica, and I appreciate you staying with me while
not
we do
at
that.
All
right, thanks.
I'm glad we got to do it in the end.
Yeah, well, we'll broadcast it tomorrow.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.